This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 and online at will.illinois.edu. I'm Celeste Quinn. Thanks for tuning in today. In the Amish communities of central Illinois, the word neighbor is more than a noun. It's also a verb. Ask Amish men, women, or children if they know another Amish person or family, and they might reply, yes, we neighbor with them. Neighbors and families are important, and faith is at the heart of both family and community. This afternoon, we're going to talk about the Amish of Central Illinois with News Gazette journalists Rebecca Mabry and Vonda Bidwell. The reporter and photographer spent many months recording the lives of the Amish in Illinois, and together with the newspaper, they have produced the book, The Amish of Illinois' Heartland. Listeners, your questions and comments are invited. We look forward to hearing from you. You can join the discussion with a telephone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, you can call us toll-free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Vonda, Becky, good to see you.
Good to be here.
Nice to have you here.
Thank you.
Lovely book.
Thank you.
The Amish of Illinois' Heartland. The book opens with a story about Lizzie Otto. Mm-hmm. And her funeral. It's a very good way to introduce us to some of the ways of the Amish, I think, and what is at the heart of living a good Amish life, faith. Mm-hmm. Becky, you want to tell us a little bit about Lizzie Otto?
She died, I believe she's 96 or 97. And what I wrote about was actually one night of her wake. The Amish have wakes two nights before the funeral, which is the third day. And in our community, in our society, if you live to be 96 or 97, you typically have grave site services with 20 people mm-hmm. and maybe less. And at her wake and her funeral over the course of 3 days, there were at least 1,500 people that came. And at least 600 of those people at the wake that I was at in the evening hours were the young people, 16 to about 20, 25, something, somewhere, single people. And they came and serenaded the family with hymns that night. It was a hot August night, I think it was. And I just thought it illustrated, first of all, she was not anyone special in the community. She was just a mother, a grandmother, great-grandmother, with bunches of siblings and children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, and they all, you know, it just all, mm-hmm. in that Amish community, you were all connected. And so if you work with a man whose grandmother died, you go to her wake or you go to her funeral. And they're just so close. They just come out of the woodwork when something like that happens. And at Lizzie's funeral, I just thought it was amazing. At the wake that I was at, I just thought it was amazing that there was that crowd probably at that night, 800, 900 people standing in line, bringing food, going through a very quick reception line to meet the family and paying their respects.
Yeah. Vonda, were you there?
I was not.
You were not there.
No, that was not something that we were able to photograph.
Obviously, maybe, yes, that when you think about it, that would be something out of respect you wouldn't do.
Right. Right.
What were the challenges for you as a photographer recording Amish life?
Well, the challenge is to take meaningful photographs while still respecting the wishes of the people you're photographing. They don't want to be posed or picked out as an individual, but if they're at a public event, like, for example, a sale, and you see a family group that looks like an interesting group, you can take their photograph, but you don't go up and ask their name. And if someone doesn't want you to photograph them, you don't.
Yeah. Was that frustrating, or did you say, well, okay.
It was frustrating.
Yeah. And also, there were people that you interviewed, Becky, who said, well, we're happy to talk with you, but don't use our names. Right? The religious leaders?
Yes. Yeah. Well, there's kind of a couple of different reasons for that. They don't want to call attention to themselves. And that is, it's not because they're afraid they're going to be misquoted. I mean, it's just strictly because they just feel like it's setting a bad example to appear in a book or something as being a spokesman for the community. The bishops and this one minister I did talk to didn't want me to use their names, but they they had their hands and fingers all throughout this book, making sure I got it right and that it was accurate. And they had no problem with the people that they knew being quoted. In fact, they sent me out to a lot of these families that they thought would be good and would be willing. But even some of these families, even after they agreed, would call me back and say, "Ooh, are you sure you need to use my name?" And I'd say, "Well, I think it'll be okay. You know, I think you'll be okay with what I print." But you don't want to make them look special.
Yeah.
You don't want to blow them up.
Is it about modesty?
Well, in the whole gist of their religion, the only person that really deserves praise or that you can look up to is God and Jesus. That man's not to be praised. And there was a scene in there where I complimented a man and I said, "Yo, you're such a good man," because he was out painting the tombstones for his ancestors. Mm-hmm. "I said, you're such a good man." And he says, "Oh, the only good man is Jesus." And that's the way they live. They don't heap praise. They don't indulge their children like we do. They don't heap praise upon each other. They just kind of try to do their job. And, save the compliments and all those kinds of things for the higher being.
Yeah, yeah. So the photographs that you were able to take, Vonda, what are you most pleased about them? What do they tell us? I think the photo on the cover is rather revealing when you stop to look at it. It's two boys on their way somewhere. They're on a road. And what they're carrying is very interesting because it's a mix of old and new, what they're wearing and what they're carrying. They're carrying igloo lunchboxes, right?
Yes. Yes, they are. Actually, Becky has good stories about the lunches that they bring.
A lot of people have the misconception that they turn their backs on modern things. They'll use anything modern, like igloo lunchboxes and ballpoint pens. I mean, they don't, use ink quills and right. that kind of thing. Their homes have, I guess, what you would call, their kitchens have just as much modern things as we have. I mean, they shop the same kind of kitchen stores we do. What they try to keep out that's modern is the electricity, which connects them to computers, television, radios. That's the whole gist. They don't turn their back on anything modern because it's not useful. So igloo's containers make sense to them.
Mm-hmm.
Take their lunch, keep it cool. It's not going to spoil. That's not going to interfere with their family and their faith the way television, stereos, radios would.
Would it be fair to say, though, that these choices are made very conscientiously?
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
There's,
'cause we don't give a second thought. But
I was taking down some Christmas wreaths, believe it or not, today. It was a little late. And I happened to think, if you were Amish, you could not have a Christmas wreath if someone gave you a Christmas wreath. You know, this little minute things we take for granted in our lives, they don't have that freedom because, they can't put a balance up on their curtain windows. All the curtain windows have to be the same. They can't have Venetian blinds. They have to have hardwood floors. They can't have carpet. And all these little rules, and they're so slow to change or put any kind of spin on it. You know, you'll see lots of pictures of barefoot women in the book, barefoot women and children. Mm-hmm. There's no transition between wearing your black tie-up shoes and black stockings and barefoot, except in the summertime, a very few people, women, wear sandals. And that's a very big controversy down there right now.
Really?
Yes. Some women will wear the sandals and the others will just turn away when they see it. They just shudder. They just can't believe.
I'm thinking of a photograph in the book now, though. It is the set out of for a wedding feast.
Oh, yeah.
And it's beautiful.
Yes.
The colors are beautiful and it's lovely. So, I mean, making these choices and being plain in a way is not always quite, that might be a misconception on our parts as well.
I think that is a misconception. But that's one time, one event where they do put out the china and the good dishes. And the weddings are a fascinating, I think, whole part of their tradition because, well, those are all, you know, they sit down and feed 350 to 500 people at that meal. Those are a lot of family dishes that people bring in, neighbors' dishes, and the pattern is sort of common in the community, so you can borrow. The blue dishes are the same. You kind of borrow them. They might even be in the church wagon. I don't know. They may. It may be typically that way because blue and white are the colors of the weddings. But the interesting thing about weddings is they're all alike. You don't get to decide what color, what time of day, how many people you have. The only thing you really get to decide is maybe the menu. And of course, your guest list or what kind of present you would give to the workers that helped. But you would have the same ceremony, the same traditions afterwards, same songs. You wouldn't decide I was going to, you know, that you were going to have flowers on the table by the cake. You wouldn't have a four-tier cake. You would only have a two-tier cake. And it would be made within the community. I mean, there are all these little rules that you follow. And it's amazing that they don't, no one ever thinks, oh, I just want to be a little bit different. I would just like my wedding to be a little bit different. Well, I had a minister tell me there was a young girl that had a little bouquet of flowers on her on the bridal table by the cake. And that didn't go.
Well, when somebody steps outside, you know, steps a little bit off to one side, gets off the straight and narrow a little bit, what happens? How was that situation handled?
I imagine the deacon or maybe even the minister probably just kind of whispered something to the father or mother and said, we probably shouldn't have those flowers there. If it's a real problem, like if somebody in a church district comes home with a John Deere tractor and parks it in their driveway and it's clear that they're using it to farm, then there is a procedure how that's done, and that would be the deacon who would go and talk to him and say, oh, you know, you're breaking the rules here. And then it would go up to the bishop, and then it would be starting putting pressure on him that way. But it ultimately leads to shunning, which is what everybody thinks a lot of shunning goes on in the Amish community. It's very rare, very rare, and it's the last resort because family and the church put pressure on him to, you know, get them to conform, live to the rules.
Well, there would be a good deal of comfort in conformity as well, wouldn't there be?
I didn't get to talk to the man until after I'd published the book, but there was a study that said the Amish are some of the happiest people in the world. There was some tribe, some primitive tribe in Malaysia or something that was also found to be happy. And he said it was because he thinks it is that sense of community, which is the conformity. I mean, if you have someone in your family that you go to the doctor and they find out they're going to have to be on a kidney and dialysis, this is kind of news spreads around that community like, you know, fire. And you're going to have people showing up with food and you're going to be getting cards and from all over Amish communities all over the country. Any kind of little family problem you're going to go through, you're going to have tremendous support. And likewise, if you really screw up somehow in your family, you're going to feel that pressure. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you don't really want to screw up.
Yeah. Well, somebody said to you that hardship is part of life, and it's what keeps us, in a sense, together. When times get tough, we come together. We're there for one another.
They have a lot of, even though they're happy, every family has, just like in our society, every family has tremendous problems and struggles with something. They're big families. A parent would have 7 or 8 children. Clearly, you know, they're going to have a couple children that might be a little bit more troublesome than others, especially when they get up into the teenage years. They're going to be challenged. And plus health problems, financial problems, and they face the same problems we do, the same struggles, but they certainly don't go it alone.
Yeah. I was surprised to learn that there's a mental health facility in Indiana for the Amish.
Yeah.
How do they handle health care?
Well, You know, because they don't have health insurance. They do a lot of self-doctoring. And in the month that I've been down there and that Vonda went down there, yeah. I mean, we got recommendations. Well, you know, if you're coughing, oh, you need to go use this supplement or whatever. And they do use a lot of health supplements and vitamins, and they go to chiropractors and reflexology. Foot reflexology used to be a big thing a few years ago. I haven't heard that much about it lately. But they'll do a lot of that before they pay the expense of going to a doctor and paying to get the x-rays or the CAT scans or that kind of thing. And when you stop and think about it, those are huge expenses that we sort of take for granted. If we're having problems, we go and we have the x-rays and the CAT mm-hmm. scans, and that could be $3,500 that our insurance covers, and it seems like it's free to us. But when you get the bill, which they do, there it goes. But, of course, the 27 church districts that has like 10 or 12 families, they have a treasury. And that's since they don't have church buildings to support or preachers to mm-hmm. pay, that's what that money goes into. So they will help families with those bills.
Yeah. I'm from Rockford, and there's a strong Scandinavian population there. And in the very early days of the community coming together there, they had what they called the Singing and Sick Society, I believe. And they would sing, and they would bring in donations this way. They would get money, and then they would put it into a fund. So if you got sick, you'd go to the society, and they'd help you with your doctor bill.
Mm-hmm.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guests this afternoon, Rebecca Mabry, she's a reporter for the News Gazette, and photographer Vonda Bidwell. And they, together with the newspaper, put together this wonderful book, The Amish of Illinois' Heartland. And that's what we're talking about this afternoon, The Amish of Central Illinois. Listeners, you can join us this afternoon with a question, a comment, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Let's take a call now, a listener in the nearby community of Belgium. If you want to put your headsets on there, we'll talk with this listener. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. In my endeavors of life, I regularly run into the Amish at auctions and things like that and discuss life with them. And you have not really mentioned the thing that they always tell me. And they say they endeavor to live life simply. And that's probably the biggest thing they really want to do more than anything else. They like to have family and everything, but they want life simple. And probably something we all should consider on a more regular basis. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Thanks for the call. Living simply.
That's actually sort of the whole thing with the book. And when I do sign it, I said I usually sign wishing you many simple pleasures. Because they have figured out how to do that. They declutter their life and they keep it that way, and so that their focus is on the faith and family.
Yeah.
You know, Sundays is nothing but worship and family. They don't even read the paper. They do very light chores. The women don't cook, and that's what that day is for. And they don't put their children in a lot of things that we stay on the road doing ourselves. You know, they don't do Little League and organized sports or art lessons or dance lessons or go down to the church and practice choir. The children spend their time at home. They're at school or at home until they're 16 years old. And so with that focus, they're free to spend their time doing things like birthday parties with neighbors down the road or helping their neighbor shell popcorn or just one very brief little scene that I loved was last winter I went down there and there was standing water out in the field, and it had frozen over, and there were about 8 children, about ages from like 4 to 12, out there in their shoes, skating on the pond.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, that's the neatest little simple pleasure I've ever seen. No one drove them there. They walked there from the house in these freezing temperatures and just skated around on that pond.
Yeah. And another thing that maybe we should mention here is it's not about, we've hit on this topic a little bit. It's not about living in the past. It's really
right.
Living for the future.
Right.
Vonda, how did you see that expressed in the Amish communities of Central Illinois?
What, living for the future?
Yeah.
Well, That's hard to answer. because they, everything they do is for the future of the community and for the kids to have the same life, the same quality of life that they have. I guess that's how I would see it.
Yeah, and also the afterlife.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the message is, are you ready to go today?
That's right. You've read the book.
Yeah.
That is the important, that is the whole thing. That's when they, that's the way they raise their children. They don't worry about what their children are going to accomplish, what, how much money they're going to make. All they worry about is, are their children going to make it into heaven?
Yeah. Let's take another call.
Okay.
So this listener is joining us this afternoon from Urbana, in Urbana, line one. Hi.
Hello.
Hello there.
Yes. The Amish have a reputation for being, quote, hard on their animals, their horses and so on, that they use for transportation, and in some states for running puppy mills. I wondered if you had any impression of or observed their involvement with animals.
Well, Vonda and I are both horse people, and yes. We sort of decided early on, we just had, because we treat our horses like family. So we recognized early on that they have a whole different way that they relate to their horses, because they're work animals. And you go out to catch the horse, you need to go down to the store and get sugar. You don't go out and catch the horse because you want to go out and play. So we didn't sit in judgment on them on the way they treated their animals. And I had seen stories as I was researching this about puppy mills out east, mm-hmm. among the Amish. And I did see signs of puppies for sale in the community. But on all of the homes that we visited that had these puppy for sale signs, it was not something I asked, because that wasn't the purpose of the book. But the female, the mother, and the litters were usually in the house. So I didn't see any signs of, like, you know, mm-hmm. overt.
Any mistreatment. Yeah. Does the listener want to follow up?
No.
Okay. Well, thanks for the call this afternoon. We call these animals pets. Yeah. And companion animals. How are dogs thought of in the community? You know, they have dogs. They have cats.
Do.
I would assume.
I don't. I very rarely saw a cat in the house. A lot of barn cats.
Yeah.
And they use, you know, when you like, some very good friends of mine invited me down for butchering day. And I refused to go. I just didn't think that would probably fit with something that I would want to do. But they explained it to me. I mean, you know, you go out on a Monday morning and you shoot the beef cow you've been raising, mm-hmm. in the head. And then you hang it up for a couple of days, and then they do all that. And that is a fact of life. And the children are around, and they help, and they have all the family and neighbors come down. You know, the house is full of 10 or 12 people, and they just make a fun day out of butchering this cow. And more, you know, more power to them.
Yeah.
I admire that, but I don't want to be there.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
I know, but they're much closer than to their food. I mean, we don't give it a second thought. We don't think about how the animals have been treated. And in this way, I would say that there are no downer cows on Amish farms.
No, I don't think so.
I think those animals would be very healthy. What communities did you focus on? And one of the things that it was interesting to learn is how thriving these communities are. Tell us where they are and who you focused on, which communities.
All around Arthur, Arcola, and a little bit down to Sullivan. And that, you know, they're sort of running out of land there, because you sort of get landlocked, and with the prices of land. So 20 years ago, when I did a series of stories about the Amish down there, Arthur was the only Amish community in Illinois. Now there are 18.
Wow.
We have one down near Casey, which I haven't visited, but a lot of there is a community down in the Carbondale area called Ava, and several families from the Arthur community have moved down there and started their own little community. And the interesting thing is, those are called New Order Amish, whereas these are Old Order. So they set up their own little community with their school and, of course, their church district. They elected bishops and ministers, and they created their own rules. And their rule is that you can farm with tractors, you can have electricity in your house, but you have to use a horse and buggy, dress plainly and simply, just like the Amish up here. And even though you have electricity in your house, you can't have air conditioning or ceiling fans or carpet.
No radio or TV.
Of course, no radio or TV. No.
Well, how do the old order feel about the new order? And vice versa.
It's such a very touchy subject right now that I couldn't even get into it in the book.
You do a little bit.
A little bit. Yeah. But families are torn because, you know, there might be parents that might have one of their married sons move down to Ava, and there's, you know, some hard feelings about it.
Yeah.
Maybe the parents will get to accept it eventually, but then the other brothers and sisters may not be that welcoming when they come back. So any kind of change, you know, is...
Well, maybe you tell us a little bit about what the Amish believe in, the relationship between Amish and Mennonites. Is there...
Well, anecdotally, I can tell you that in the large Amish families that I got to know, where there were grown parents that had grown children, there was at least one of their children that had decided not to become Amish. And they would usually become Beachy Amish or Beachy Mennonite. It's the same thing, but called different things. And that's one step removed. And that means the Beachy Amish drive cars. And they can have electricity, but they still don't have computers or televisions or radios. In fact, I don't think they even have radios in their cars. But there are some transformations of that as it moves on up into the Mennonite religion, so that there are like five or six Mennonite churches down there in that area. And the most modern, the Arthur Mennonite Church, which I visited just a couple months ago, people dress just like you and I do. And it's just a modern-day church. And so you can halfway through, I mean, the Beachy Amish, the women still wear white head coverings and dress in the plain dresses. But you can go on up about halfway on that scale, and women might wear like black doilies on their head and print dresses, but still they'd be homemade, that kind of thing. So, variations.
Yeah. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guests this afternoon, Becky Mabry and Vonda Bidwell. They did some reporting on the Amish of Illinois' Heartland and have produced this book, The Amish of Illinois' Heartland. And that's what we're talking about here this afternoon on the Afternoon Magazine. My name is Celeste Quinn. We've got a couple of calls coming in now, so let's go and talk with some other listeners. If you'd like to join us, you're more than welcome. If you've got a question, a comment, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, anywhere else, toll free, 800-222-9455. Let's talk with someone now in Champaign on line one. Hi.
Hi, good afternoon, and thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is social problems among the children, the teenagers, in particular drugs, substances, methamphetamine, since it is rural Illinois. How is that affecting them, and how do they handle it? Thanks.
Okay. Thanks for the call.
It is affecting them, and that's one reason why some of these new communities are being started, because some parents that have young children think they can isolate their children a little bit more if they go down and start their own community. There is a misconception among our society, and I don't know where we got it, where we think that the Amish, when their children turn 16, then they reach this age called Rumspringa, that the Amish say, oh, go out and sow your wild oats and live it up, because you're not always going to get to do that, and sort of give them permission to go out and drink and smoke and run around and get cars. And that's absolutely not true. The Amish keep their children at home till the age of 16, when the Rumspringa means then you can go without your mom and dad.
On a date?
On a date.
Yeah.
They can go down and play softball. Until they're 16, they can't even go down to the Sunday afternoon softball game.
It's all chaperoned.
They cannot do that even with a big sister. They have to be 16. So then when they start running around, they get that freedom. And they're working in shops, you know, when they're 16, and they're, not all the people in the shops are Amish. And, of course, they meet people in Arthur and Argola and whatever. And so they're exposed to drugs and alcohol, and it is a terrible, terrible problem. They just wring their hands when they talk about it. And, of course, not for all families, but, I mean, all families are touched by it. If it's not within their own family and their immediate children, they've got nephews and nieces that are touched by it. And it's just a huge challenge, and they do a lot of praying. That's what they do. And they have speakers come in. They try to not, I guess you wouldn't call it counseling, but therapists would come in and try to offer suggestions for parents how to deal with these challenging times. And if things go well and the children do get off the beaten path a little bit, they will come back and join the church when they're late teens, usually, 20, 21. But a lot of the confusion in our community comes because we see children, teenagers, dressed as Amish in horses and buggies, smoking, or they're obviously drunk. And you think, well, the Amish are hypocrites because they obviously... But what you're seeing are teenagers raised in Amish homes that live in Amish homes that have to dress that way and have to drive the horse and buggy, but they don't have to live by the rules of the church because they're not Amish yet.
When does a person typically choose to be baptized?
Late teens, early 20s.
Yeah. Let's take another call. Okay. Listener in Urbana, line 2. Good afternoon.
Hi. I'm calling because I'm interested in the reading they do. What sort of, do they have books at home? And is the reading restricted? And, talk about that, about books.
Okay. Thanks for the call.
Well, the adult women and men that I know do a lot of reading, and it's spiritual reading. And their Bibles are worn thin, plus they have daily devotional readers and spiritual guides and those kinds of things. But the library, the Arthur Library, has a lot of Amish people come in, and young teenagers and so forth, and they'll read whatever they can. Their mom and dad will probably let them read, and maybe some even that they don't show their mom and dad. But I don't think, if you go to some of the Amish shops that sell books, there are all kinds of like romance novels that are sort of light romance, that would be appropriate. They sell those kinds of things. And, of course, for the younger children, they sell the farm animal stories and those kinds of things. But a lot of the books that you'll see for sale are Bible story books, even, you know, picture books that way. For the very youngest readers.
Yeah. What about nonfiction? And, you know, you mentioned the newspaper. What kinds of nonfiction books are? Do they read the paper? Would they read the Amish of Illinois Heartland?
They are. I had a very good friend who subscribed to either Time or Newsweek, and that was kind of unusual. But they do read the paper. Usually the most important thing there are the ads, because they're very frugal people and they like to cut the ads and get the bargains. They like to have a little bit of an idea of what's going out in the world. They don't put a lot of their time and emphasis into that. Their focus is on their community. And they would get more interested in the world if they thought it was going to affect them, like if they thought a war was looming or something like that. But they can pretty much get by without spending a whole lot of time wondering about who's going to be the next president of the United States.
Hmm. What do they feel about service in the military?
They're conscientious objectors. And during World War II, I know that they had rocks thrown at them. And it was some really harsh times for them down there. Vietnam, I don't remember hearing stories about that, but a lot of the young men were drafted and they served in hospitals. And they very willing to serve that commitment, but they won't pick up weapons.
Yeah. Do they volunteer today?
No.
We don't have a draft, so they wouldn't even volunteer to do medical service or that kind of thing. Okay. What do you say we take another call?
Okay.
A listener in St. Joe, line 1. Good afternoon.
Yes. I was wondering about the genetic pool for
marriage, whether it's large enough to be adequate for keeping inbreeding down?
Hmm. Well, that's certainly an issue out east. And Holmes County, Ohio, which is the largest Amish settlement in the United States, that's a very serious problem. And they brought in doctors that try to help them with that. It's something that in our community locally, they're very aware of and they're very careful about. And the young people, you know, you are all very, you know, the 6 degrees of separation, it's like mm-hmm. 1 degree of separation down there. I mean, there's just a lot of
a lot of concern about that. So when it comes time to make a marriage, how does that issue get sorted out?
Well, I had a very good friend tell me you just worry until your children pick their mate. You just worry that it's not going to be someone who's too close. But they winter in Sarasota. They've got this community down there called Pinecraft.
Yeah.
And a lot of the young people go to Sarasota, sort of for retired people, but a lot of the young people go down there and meet other Amish from around the country. So that's one place they meet others. Plus, there's a lot of traveling among the Amish young people to settlements in Kansas and Missouri and even up into Canada. So you can get some fresh genes that way.
Yeah. The listener want to follow up?
No, that's fine. Thank you.
That's good. Okay. Thanks for the call. Well, tell us about this community in Florida, the snowbirds.
Well, it's packed this time of year. Little teeny tiny cottages and any little, like a 20 by 20 foot garage can be made into two little cottages. I visited a friend there and his house was like his little rental apartment was a bed. And about 5 feet away was a kitchen with a sink and a stove and a table and a chair and a TV. So he joked, you know, he said, our bedroom is in the living room, which is in the kitchen. And it's very affordable. I mean, they take the train, or there's actually a bus that leaves Arthur one day a week and takes a full load down there. And they'll stay for a week or a month. There's 3 or 4 months.
Yeah. And what's life like there? In terms of what, you know, the daily routine is going to be, I would imagine, quite different.
Well, because they are retired, they spend a lot of time visiting. I kind of bummed around with my friend and his wife down there, and we went garage sailing, because that's not something they get to do at home, because they're rural people. So there were a lot of garage sales every day, and, of course, they love to shop for those kinds of bargains. And shuffleboard is a big thing for the men. The women do a lot of quilting and just a lot of socializing. I went around with my friend and we knocked on doors and visited with Amish people from another state. I think it was from Ohio that they had, you know, met in years past. And stopping on the street, there's always a cluster of people talking in the street. Driving a car on a street down there is just impossible because all the people standing around talking. They say if you don't want to socialize, don't go to Pinecraft, because that's what you do.
It's very interesting. Well, Becky mentions quilts. Let's bring Vonda into the conversation here. There are some photographs of quilts in the book, and this is a very visual kind of art and expression. Are there other ways that the Amish express themselves? And maybe you could talk with us a little bit about the art and craft of quilting and what it means to the women who do that work.
Actually, Becky would know more about the art, how they feel about it. I just took some photographs of some of the quilts, and they make some beautiful quilts for us English people, and they make much plainer quilts for their own use.
Ah.
It's the English people who like the bright colors and the fancy patterns and stuff. So those are very commercial. Some of the quilts I saw, like in people's homes, they're gorgeous, but they're plain, very plain.
So can you describe a plain quilt for us?
It doesn't have a colorful pattern. It's mostly
No prints.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Might it be just one color and just the quilting is done, you know, the sewing on it?
They're usually simple blocks or mm-hmm. very mm-hmm. simple mm-hmm. patterns and maybe two colors. Like I saw one that was very pretty that was a light silver gray and maroon and had like a star pattern. And then, like you say, the fancy work was actually done in the stitching and the quilting.
Let's talk a little bit about the children again. How are they schooled? And they only go through the eighth grade. Mm-hmm.
There's no kindergarten. They start school at first grade. There's, most of the schools now have two rooms. So it would be like the first, second, third, and fourth in one room, and fifth, sixth, seventh, and eighth in the other. They start their school with a lot of hymn singing and praying. They learn scriptures every day. And the amazing thing that I've found about it, well, their children are very well behaved. The children are spanked if they don't behave. And every Amish teacher I talked to said the parents support them 100% on that. If they have to spank a child that day, the child goes home and probably gets a spanking at home. So, and also I got to thinking about it too. If they're in neighborhood schools, maybe 20 kids in the whole school, and half of them they might be related to. So they're not going to get away with too much. So that would kind of give you an inclination to behave too.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what does a young person then do when they're 14 or 15 years old? How does that stage of their life begin to unfold?
That's when the parents really concentrate on teaching them how to work. And like the girls, well, even before then, they would be responsible for doing the laundry and maybe cooking meals. For the big family and helping out in the yard and definitely helping in the garden and canning and that kind of thing. And the boys would be helping their dad. And though they're not supposed to legally start work in the shops at 16, they'd certainly be out there if their dad had a shop sweeping and learning how to do those kinds of things and running around helping with deliveries. They work their children a little bit differently than we do. They really see it as a important part of being a parent is to teach their children responsibility, get up early, get a job, that you know that if I give you a chore, you make sure it's finished. They have high expectations for that.
Yeah, and the people are, again, this goes back to the idea of these communities thriving. Some of the businesses are really very successful.
They have found a niche market. And I didn't even, none of us around here really realized it, but this Amish furniture is being shipped all over the country. Los Angeles, Las Vegas has a store, even up into Alaska, where people are looking for high-end handmade furniture. And, you know, they pay tremendous prices for some of these yeah. Amish pieces.
But then the starting wages, the wages that one can earn are quite good.
Yeah, $10, $12 an hour.
Yeah. Let's take one more call, and then we've got to wrap it up. A listener in Muhammad, line one. Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
I really have just a comment and not a question, but a few years ago, a group of women from the university antiques group, we made a trip, I believe it was to Arcola, and there is an Amish information center there in town, and we saw a historical type film to provide knowledge to people in the various communities. They had some books available to read about the Amish, and of course they did have some items there to purchase. There also is a author, Judy Picoult, who wrote her first novel was titled Plain Truth, and it's an investigative-type novel, but it took place in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, outside of Philadelphia. And it went quite heavily into the customs and the culture of the Amish, along with the Mennonite, because one of the characters in it had been married into a Mennonite family, but who had Amish background. So that's all I have to say, and I just wanted to provide that information if anybody's interested.
Okay, well, thanks for the call. You want to talk a little bit about the visitor center?
Well, it's a great place to go, the Amish Interpretive Center in Arcola. A lot of Amish families have donated family items there. We picture one in the book, which is an old suit jacket worn by Daniel Schrock, one of the original founders of the Amish community here. And the cute thing about that is his descendants borrow that suit jacket once a year and take it to family reunions. But they have a wedding table set up like you know, with the blue and white rose dishes and the blue crystal dishes and some clothes, and it's worth the visit.
Yeah, it's worth a visit. Well, thank you very much for talking with us this afternoon. So what's the word in the heartland of the Amish in Illinois in terms of this book? What kind of responses are you getting from the people that you've gotten to know over time?
Very positive responses. It's been
good.
Interesting. People will come and look at the photographs and tell me who was in them. Because I don't go up to people and ask
them
their names.
That was part of the deal.
But Amish people like to look at the photos, and they will often tell you who's in the photos and pass it around among themselves.
And Becky, what
are... I've had a friend tell me that other Amish people have read it that don't know me and said, I was very flattered by this, said, "Well, Becky must be Amish."
Well, there we've got to wrap it up.
Okay.
I want to thank the two of you very much for joining me this afternoon.
Thank you.
Rebecca Mabry, the author of The Amish of Illinois' Heartland, the photos taken by our guest, Vonda Bidwell. This is the Afternoon Magazine. It is 1:54 Central Time. Let's find out what happened today in Kansas City and in Chicago with the grain exchanges here with those settlement numbers. Todd Gleason.
Thank you very much. The last taking a look at the numbers as they settled on a Monday afternoon in Chicago. Futures like this. Nearby March wheat up 47.5 cents today. The high at 11.40, the low at $10.74. Settlement price at 11.40, up 47.5 for the soft red in Chicago. Minneapolis Grain Exchange wheat, by the way, the March contract up 26.75 at 13.46.5. The nearby March Kansas City wheat up 45 at $11.90. Back to Chicago for the soft red. May futures at a 58-cent gain, 11.65 the high, the low at 10.80 3/4. Settlement price at 11.63, up 58. And July futures, your new crop harvest month, soft red, 11.28.5 the high, the low at 41.25. That's $10.41 1/4. And a settlement price up near the top at $11.21 3/4, 53 1/4 higher. December contract, 11.38.5 the high, the low at 52.5, and a settlement price at $11.38.5, 60 cents higher. That would be a limit move in the wheat pit. March contract, 22 cents higher in the nearbys. 5.56 the top for the corn, the low at 16.5, a settlement price at $5.55.5, up 22 cents today for the March corn. May futures, 5.66.5 the high, the low at 27.25. Settlement price at 5.65 3/4, 18.5 cents higher. In July futures, 5.79 the high, the low at $5.39, settlement price at 5.78 1/4, up 19.25. And September futures, 5.79 the high, the low at 5.39 3/4. Settlement price at 5.79, up 20 cents. That's a limit move higher in the September. 20 is the current limit, by the way, on the corn pit. But as you'll hear during the closing market report a bit later this afternoon, Chicago Board of Trade has asked that the limits for corn and soybeans, along with soybean oil, be increased. We'll talk about that more later during the closing market report at 6 after the hour of 2 o'clock. That's right at, 10 minutes away now. December contract, in the... corn pit, a 5.79 settlement price, up 19.75. The top was at $5.79 1/4, the bottom at 5.40 1/4, and the settlement price at $5.79. That for your new crop corn, up 19.75 for the December contract. March at 20 cents higher for the following year in 09, at 5.86 3/4. Top, bottom at 49.5. And a settlement price up the limit there as well at 5.86 3/4. December 09 corn at 5.48, up 12.25 for the day. March oats at 3.82, down 9 cents. The May at 3.90 3/4, down 8.5. March soybean futures, 13.93 the high, the low at 28. Settlement price at 13.88, up 47. May at 14.12 3/4 on the top, the bottom at 13.58 3/4. Settled at 14.06.5, down 2.25. In July, down 1/2 cent. 1426 and three quarters the high. The low at 1371. July settled 1420 and a half, down one half for the day. August soybean futures, a 1409 penny lower close for the day. And the September's up a half at 1355 and a half. November, 1312 and three quarters the high. The low at 1261 and a half. A settlement price for your new crop November soybeans, $13 even, down 11.5 cents. January is 1319 the high. The low at 1269. A settlement price at 1308, and they finished 11 cents lower. Bean meal March contract 353.20, up 14.20. March bean oil at 61.20, up 0.95 a pound. I'm Todd Gleason.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Mike Morris and McHenry at 815-344-7213. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
The livestock contracts finished lower today on the day at the Mercantile Exchange in Chicago. March feeder cattle, $100.85 the high, $99.85 the low. The settlement, $100.20, that down 40. April, $104.25 the high, $102.90 the low, $103.12.5 the settlement, that down 85. May, $107.70 the high, $106.07.5 the low. The settlement, $106.15 down 140. August, $111.90 the high, $110.20 the low, $110.35 the settlement, that down 142.5. April live cattle, $90.45 the high, $89.60 the low, $89.75 the settlement, that down 77.5. June, $92.15 the high, $91.27.5 the low, the settlement, $91.50, that down 50. August, $96.20 the high, $95.27.5 the low, the settlement, $95.95 down 37.5. And October, $101.27.5 the high, $100.35 the low, $101.17.5 the settlement, that down 47.5. April, lean hogs, $58.25 the high, $57.40 the low, the settlement, $57.72.5, that down 12.5. May, $68.50 the high, $67.40 the low, $68.40 the settlement, that down 22.5. June, $74.60 the high, $73.50 the low, $73.90 the settlement, that down 20. July, $78.25 the high, $77.25 the low, the settlement, $77.97.5. That down 7.5 cents. And March pork bellies down $3 today. $80.50 the high, $78.50 the low, $78.50 the settlement, that down $3. You're tuned to the Afternoon Magazine on WILL Urbana, the broadcasting service of the College of Communications at the University of Illinois. On the AM dial at 580 and online at will.illinois.edu. It's 2 o'clock Central Time. Mike Solo's forecast for Illinois and Indiana this afternoon: in northern Illinois and eastern Indiana, partly to mostly cloudy with a few widely scattered flurries or areas of drizzle. Elsewhere, partly to mostly sunny, highs ranging from 30 in northwestern Illinois to near 50 in the far south. Tonight in southeastern Indiana, partly to mostly cloudy with a few snow showers and flurries. Elsewhere, clear to partly cloudy, lows ranging from 20 in northwestern Illinois to 28 in southern Illinois. And the outlook for tomorrow, mostly sunny, highs ranging from 40 in northeastern Indiana to 60 in southwestern Illinois. This afternoon in Champaign-Urbana, we're looking for a high around 40, although with the clouds that we've seen move in, we might not get there. Tonight, mainly clear, the low 23. Tomorrow, sunny, breezy, warmer, the high 55. There will be more on the weather during the closing market report that's coming up following news from NPR in Washington. Stay tuned.